So it's good to see all of you here this morning engaging in self-care, engaging in some self-love, because it's really easy to forget that this time of year, you know, with all the hustle bustle and the traffic and the shopping and the travel. It just gets, and all of it's really beautiful. I mean, we're, you know, the spirit of giving, but sometimes it all just gets too much. And so the fact that you're here taking care of yourselves makes me really happy. Especially during the season, I think that, you know, with the dark and the cold, there's this inclination to want to turn inward. And, you know, but society's kind of saying we have to be outward, do all this stuff. So it's great that you're coming in to sort of touch base with yourself. Also, I think now we're here in the Bay Area, so we're in our bubble. But I think that certainly since the election, that there has been, people I know have noticed, there's been this sort of underlying sense of unease. It could be fear, trepidation, anticipation, just this sort of underlying ugh that's making people sort of hunker down, get a little defensive. So again, it's great that you're here. Speaking of the election, I had a rather unique, shall we say, opportunity. I had to teach the night after the election. It was my turn up at BATA inside Richmond. And I had prepared this whole talk about equanimity, right? This mind that can hold both the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows, figuring that we just needed to find our way back to balance after what had been a really ugly election. And nobody really expected what happened. And so instead, everybody was in shock, and there was despair, and there was all these really heavy feelings that we had to, you know, as a teacher, I wanted just people to be with. So I had to throw out my talk about equanimity, because going to that, you know, asking folks just like, oh, it's all impermanent, it's dukkha, it's not self, it's not, you know, it just felt like this huge spiritual bypass that we were trying to get to some place that we just weren't there, that wasn't the medicine that was being called for. So what I've found in my own practice and the practice of others is that we keep being called back to metta, to loving kindness, to compassion, and particularly for ourselves. You know, we need to be able to give ourselves love, to give ourselves compassion, if we want to give it in return. So I found myself, like I said, it keeps coming up. It keeps coming up at work. It keeps coming up in my practice. And also a couple weeks ago, I went to a workshop with Dr. Kristen Neff and Dr. Chris Germer, who have essentially written the books on self-compassion. And they're both Dharma practitioners, but they're also psychologists who have been engaged in the research on self-compassion. So they're finding that it's not just this touchy-feely psychotherapeutic thing, that there's a real science between in terms of our well-being and being able to give ourselves compassion. So you may be hearing more about self-compassion. It's sort of in the same place that mindfulness was, right? Mindfulness came from a practitioner who applied research to it, and suddenly it's very mainstream. And so today I want to talk to you about some of the things and techniques that I learned in that workshop. So why is it important that we develop compassion for ourselves? You know, sometimes it may feel a little self-indulgent. Sometimes self-care feels a little selfish. But it's really important that we're able to, you know, develop this ability to sit with our own suffering. Compassion is the mind, is the heart that opens when it meets suffering. Metta, loving kindness, is just the heart that wishes for everyone to be happy. But with compassion, it has that element of meeting suffering, and it's the reaction of an open, loving heart. So for those of you who have done any formal metta practice or loving kindness practice, as you know, in the formal practice, we start sending this loving kindness to ourselves through the use of these phrases, may I be happy, may I be safe, may I be healthy, may I be at ease. And then we send it out to the sort of radiating, you know, to somebody dear to us, to a good friend, neutral person, so that we encompass the whole world with this open, loving heart. But what we often find is that that first piece, that compassion, that loving kindness towards oneself is the hardest. And so it's the same with self-compassion, right? We need to be able to start with ourselves because that's the connection. With metta and compassion, we need to get in touch with our own longing for happiness, our own wish for happiness, and to be able to hold, to be able to be with and hold our own suffering before we can do that for others. And so, if we're not able to be with our own suffering and to be able to hold it, our understanding of the suffering of others may be disconnected. It may seem a bit academic. And so, you know, we want to be able to develop this deep compassion, so we have to start here first. Because what happens when we're not really connected with the suffering of others is that we get what's called the near enemy of compassion, which is pity, right? And that's sort of this, oh, poor you. Ooh, that sucks. Wouldn't want to be you. Right? There's this disconnect. There's kind of this up here and you're down there and poor suffering you. And anybody who's been on the receiving side of pity, you know it doesn't feel good. Right? You're already feeling bad and somebody's pitying you. It's like, yuck. So compassion is that ability to be with, to meet someone's suffering. It's not necessarily changing the circumstances of it, but it's that ability to be there heart to heart with somebody else's suffering. And also, you know, perhaps we feel like I have a lot of compassion for others. You know, maybe not so much myself, but I'm a very compassionate person. I do service, I do this. But what happens is that if we have a lot of compassion for others, but we can't hold our own compassion, we can't hold our own suffering, is that we can burn out. We collapse underneath the weight of the suffering of others and our own suffering. And then we're no good to anybody. So we need to be able to have some ways of soothing and holding our own suffering in order that we can be there for others. Also, you know, self-compassion is the, like I said, the doorway to universal compassion. You know, as we keep opening our heart more and more and more and more. But it's also the doorway to wisdom. So if we're on this path of awakening, most of you are probably familiar with the Four Noble Truths, right? The Four Noble Truths, the first one's which the truth is suffering. You should know suffering. And so if we're not able to sort of be with our own suffering, then we're kind of missing the rest of the path. We're missing the motivation for awakening. So that's why it's important for us to develop. It's like it's the pathway to wisdom, it's the pathway to compassion. So we all have our strategies for dealing with our suffering, right? Sometimes we push it away, we may push it down, we externalize, we blame others, we try to fix. We distract ourselves. Or we numb out, right? Or we start doing what's called shooting the second arrow. Basically, you know, for those of you who know the parable, it's we can't, you know, we're human. We're going to experience pain. We're going to experience physical pain. We're going to experience emotional pain. We're going to experience loss, sickness, the whole gamut. But that's the first arrow. But the second arrow is the one that we shoot in ourselves for having the audacity to suffer. And so what we tend to do is when we're experiencing these things, rather than being able to kind of hold it, we start to judge ourselves. And We may tell ourselves, you know, oh, I should be able to handle this. I should be better. I should be, you know, there's all these shoulds, all these expectations. And it's like we're already feeling miserable, yet we tend to, you know, start beating ourselves up for it. Somehow it's our fault. So our inner voice, this inner critic, can be really, really mean. I have a colleague at work, and she's going through her second divorce, and it's Christmas. Her kids are with her first husband. She's miserable. She's sad. And when I talk to her, she's like, I'm so stupid. I can't hold on to a relationship. I'm so, you know, it's just this constant, and you're like, my heart's breaking for her. It's like, just be with that pain rather than beating yourself up for being in pain. So self-compassion is going against the stream, against some of our ways that we've dealt with things before with our inner critic. So this inner critic may be like old parental voices, old family voices. It may be the voices of our media, our culture, that tell us because of our gender, our race, our age, our sexual orientation, identity, size, class, etc., that we're not worthy, that we're less than, that somehow we should be different. And we know when we're feeling strong, when we're feeling confident, that this is all rubbish. You know, we know that these messages are just rubbish. Yet, when we're feeling vulnerable, when we're feeling small, when we're sad, those voices can get really, really loud. And we believe them. So training in self-compassion is a way to start reconditioning our mind so that we're not always falling into believing our inner critic, believing the inner judgment. In the workshop, Dr. Neff and Dr. Germer talked about how sometimes when we turn towards our suffering with a sense of compassion, with kindness, tenderness, that sometimes what we may experience is what they call backdraft, but in Buddhist terms we'll call purification. Sometimes more stuff is like, oh, you're going to welcome me? All right, I'm going to show up. And so just to be aware of that, that sometimes if more comes up when we start to face it, that's okay. We can hold that too. But just to be aware that sometimes when we're churning things, you know, stuff that's been sort of pushed down may decide to sort of reappear and go, hey, how you doing? For myself, when I first started doing self-metta practice and self-compassion, the way it showed up for me is that I was like in self-metta. They're simple phrases. I mean, come on. You know, may I be happy? May I be safe? May I be really simple. I could say them for others like a champ. I mean, I'm just like, bam, bam, bam. For myself, I'm like, may I be, you know, it was so foreign to be wishing myself happiness. And it's the same with the self-compassion practice. I would find myself as like the first, when I go through it, the first couple steps, I'd be good, good, good. Then be like, So we'll come up against our stuff. We'll come up against things that may be a little painful. So I want to talk about, let's talk about some of the techniques that we can use in our daily lives to start reconditioning ourselves to be able to turn towards ourselves with a sense of tenderness and compassionate. And fortunately or unfortunately, our life gives us a lot of opportunities to practice. You know, this is like a daily life practice. This is something that you can do whenever you're starting to feel upset, whenever something hurts. So it's not just a practice on the cushion. This really is how do we turn towards ourselves during our daily life. So the first that they talked about is what's called a self-compassion break. And so when we're feeling upset, when we're feeling hurt, whatever the, you know, or I was trying to, when I first got here, I was nervous. I was like, okay, can I kind of soothe this nervousness rather than letting the voices get in my head? So we turn towards it. We turn towards the suffering, and we acknowledge it's here. And we may do this with a gesture. We may do this sometimes, you know, hand on the heart, you know, just sort of sometimes, ouch. Or, you know, this is a moment of suffering. This is hard. You know, whatever it is that's a way for you to acknowledge it, we just allow ourselves just to acknowledge it. Just, ouch, this really hurts. So we're saying, you're here. And then next, we sort of bring ourselves out into sort of a larger context. And so we can either acknowledge that suffering is a part of life, or perhaps others have suffered as I have. And what this does, this is not a way of diminishing our suffering. This is simply a way of sort of getting out of that isolation that we tend to get to when we're suffering. Sometimes we're in the middle of something, we think our suffering is very unique, no one's going to understand it, and you know, and so we get in this little box. So this way is sort of breaking out of the box a little bit, but it's not a way of diminishing it. It's just sort of seeing the larger picture, the larger truth. And then finally, we try to soothe, to comfort. And so whatever it is that you wish that someone would say for you, you know, it's like, may I treat myself with kindness? May I be free from the suffering? May I be okay? Just whatever it is, we're not necessarily trying to change the situation. It's not trying to fix anything. It's just when you think about what you might say to a good friend who's in the middle of some suffering that you can't do anything about, but you're just there to soothe and to comfort and to be tender. And so we just turn towards it, and we're just tender with it. Curious, how does that land for folks? Does that seem like something people can do, or does it seem like that's weird? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they talk about, and that's another technique they talk about, is soothing touch. You know, and there's some science about it with the oxytocin and some attachment theory. I don't, you know, I mean, the research is there. But touching ourselves in a soothing way has the same effect of somebody else touching us in a soothing way. And so, you know, touching the heart actually does have a way of bringing the system to calm down. It's a way of getting in touch with ourselves. So sometimes, you know, we may want to experiment for ourselves. You know, what feels good to us? What kind of touch is comforting to us? You know, like I said, I'm a big heart person. I just kind of always land here. But they said, you know, sometimes a hand to the face, you know, or even though this feels really silly to do in public, but I've done it at home, like stroking the hair. I mean, it's a very sort of young gesture. But there's something very soothing. And it's interesting when you think about it, there are things that we do unconsciously too. You know, have you ever noticed, like, when you're uncomfortable, we start touching our face, sometimes we'll touch our hair, you know, sometimes, you know, rubbing our arm, our hands. So all of these ways are ways that we can soothe ourselves. And especially with touch, that's you know, it's easy to do. So these are techniques that are validated by science, so it's not just, you know, airy-fairy stuff, but it's just ways that when we're hurting, that we can give ourselves some comfort. And then the other technique was what she called soften, soothe, and allow. And so that one essentially starts with where, you know, you're in upset. And we try to hone in on what it is that we're feeling. Because sometimes when we're in upset, it just becomes this whole mishigas of just emotions. And we don't even know what it is. You know, it's like, what's underneath there? And so we take the time to just kind of be with it. So again, we're sort of holding the suffering. We're like, what is this? It's anger. You know, this is anger. This is hurt. There's grief. Grief is also takes us by surprise. I've had a few times when I was, you know, just flailing, and then I just kind of realized, it was like, oh, that's just grief. And being able to be with it and to sit with it and recognize it as this is grief was really helpful. So, and then if there's a lot, we try to figure out which one's the strongest, which of the ones is really, you know, sort of driving us. And then we check our body, because all of our emotions are going to show up in our body in some way or another, right? That mind-body connection. And so then we touch in with our body. It's like, where are we holding that? Maybe it's in maybe our heart feels tight, or our heart is kind of, you know, rushing, you know, fast. Maybe our jaw, you know, we sort of go, oh, wow, my jaw is really tight. You know, our shoulders. So we see where that's landing in our body. And then we try to soften as best we're able. You know, again, we're not trying to fix things or make them disappear. We're just trying to get in touch with them. And so then we allow ourselves just to soften as best we're able. And if sometimes it's hard, we'll maybe just soften around the edges, you know, as close to it as we can. And then again, we can give ourselves some physical contact as a way of soothing that area. You know, if the heart is feeling tight or constricted, sometimes again, we can just. And then again, we can also offer ourselves some words of comfort. So these are all techniques that we can use when we're in the middle of upset, to try to bring ourselves into just a little bit more, just allowing for what's going on, without pushing it away, without listening to that inner critic, without shooting that second arrow. Comments or questions about that, your experience with the inner critic, or you know, and also you're right, sometimes the body starts to, in meditation, starts to actually, sort of the system starts to unwind. You know, there is that sort of sense of the body just kind of doing what it needs to do to get disconnected, you know, and so our body's feeling all of it. You know, our body is feeling all of it. And so sometimes, and it seems a little bit more easy to handle when it's in our body, because we don't have the stories necessarily associated. Because it's really easy for us to go into story when we're feeling emotional pain, or where something has happened, we'll go into some story about it. But if we can locate it in the body, then we can explore it with mindfulness. You know, what is this like? It's tightness. What is this like? It's throbbing, burning, you know, and then we can allow that to, because sometimes the stories can be a little hard to untangle. So thank you. But actually, I think I'm going to read this first. So this is from Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Zen teacher, and Kristen Neff, who, you know, did the workshop, who has sort of written the book. She said actually it was a Thich Nhat Hanh quote that, you know, tuned her into self-compassion, that started her on this journey, that she was able to sort of hold her own suffering. And so thought this is a sort of a beautiful context for developing that willingness to look at our own suffering in order to open ourselves to the suffering of others, to open ourselves to compassion. So he's talking about various emotions, and he says, we don't tell our fear to go away, we recognize it. We don't tell our anger to go away, we acknowledge it. These feelings are like a small child tugging at our sleeves. Pick them up and hold them tenderly. Acknowledging our feelings without judging them or pushing them away, embracing them with mindfulness is an act of homecoming. Our suffering reflects the suffering of the world. Discrimination, exploitation, poverty, and fear cause a lot of the suffering in those around us. Our suffering also reflects the suffering of others. We may be motivated by desire to do something to help relieve the suffering in the world, but how can we do that without understanding the nature of suffering? If we understand our own suffering, it will become easier for us to understand the suffering of others and of the world. We may have the intention to do something or be someone that can help the world suffer less, but unless we listen to and acknowledge our own suffering, we will not really be able to help. If a lotus is to grow, it needs to be rooted in the mud. Compassion is born from understanding suffering. We should all learn to embrace our own suffering, to listen to it deeply, and to have a deep look into its nature. In doing so, we allow the energy of love and compassion to be born. When the energy of compassion is born, right away we suffer less. When we suffer less, we have compassion for ourselves. We can more easily understand the sufferings of another person and of the world. Then our communication with others will be based on the desire to understand rather than our desire to prove ourselves right or make ourselves feel better. We will only have the intention to help. I think that really beautifully addresses sometimes our own objections we have to self-care. We may think it's selfish, but we need to be able to take care of ourselves in order to take care of others. And so particularly in these times when we may be feeling fear about what's going to be happening in our country, in our world, we know that there's going to be a lot of need out there. A lot of people are going to need help. We're going to need help. And so in order to be able to have the fuel to do that, we need to be able to, you know, as he says, understand our own suffering so that we can have the inner strength and the will and the motivation to help others. Get ready and just, we're just going to sit for like a half hour or so. Find a comfortable posture wherever you're sitting, or if you need to be up in a chair, or if you'd rather go back onto the floor, that's fine too. Posture that feels upright, dignified, yet at the same time has a sense of ease, relaxation. Back into our bodies. Body, feeling the contact. Feet on the floor. Hands on our knees or in our lap. The gentle touch of our eyelids, our lips. We tune in to our body, we can listen even closer, and we may feel sensations of the body being alive, maybe tingling or throbbing, pulsing. Feel the gentle movements of our body breathing. Tension with the inhale. Go, release the exhale. Minute or two to find out for ourselves where the breath feels the most alive, feels the most like home. For some, it may be the sensation of the breath at the nostrils. Breath may be more alive for you at the chest. Where you can most easily access the breath. Be your home for the next. When the mind starts to wander, as it will, to thoughts, your to-do list, memories, nowhere to go. Harbor. Wandered away, we come back without judgment, without recrimination. Hold it with our experience with compassion, with tenderness. Last few minutes of this meditation, I want to invite you, if you're moved to get in touch with your deepest desire. You to stay in touch with your heart. Before we go today, and Spirit Rock will have a few announcements, I just want to leave with this poem that many of you in the Dharma circles may have heard before, but I think it's just so lovely. It's called Love After Love by Derek Walcott. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at each other's welcome and say, sit, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread. Give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored, for another who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photograph, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit. Feast on your life. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Anyone else? Final thoughts? You don't need to do anything fancy. We're just going to do a quick dedication of the merit. So if there's been any benefit, any merit from our gathering here together, to touch in with our hearts, to take care of ourselves, may that benefit, may that merit be spread to our dear ones, to our community, to our hurting country and the entire planet, both human and non-human. May all living beings be happy and have the causes of happiness, and may all living beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. And drive safely. Happy holidays.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.